About it, and there it is. It's live. Hello, folks. This is Walt, and on behalf of the BAMF podcast, we are talking about and a creative spotlight today where we are focusing on what is in the cards, whether it be tarot, poker, or that weird thing where you make fun of your friends with the black cards with all the funny answers on them. There's tons of stuff and tons of fun to be had at any game table. And to talk about that, we have some of the folks from Legendary Games here. So starting off with Rachel, who we've talked to on a couple of different occasions, who are you and what makes you famous?
My name is Rachel Ventura, and I am the business director for Legendary Games. I have done some freelance writing for a number of third-party publishers. I used to be the VP of sales and marketing for Frog God Games. And in 2016, I was Gen Con's industry insider guest of honor. One of many.
And you, sir, who are you and what makes you famous?
I am Jimmy Sanders. I am the lead game designer for Mythica Gaming. We created the Legends of Draxia card game. We launched that a couple years ago, and I've got an RPG based in the Draxia universe. And a little bit ago, back in this last Gen Con, so almost a year ago, I met up with Rachel from Legendary, and she asked if I would be interested in designing a game for Legendary Games, and I said yes. And so here we are with Fates of Madness, which is currently on Kickstarter.
Excellent. So,
Not quite as long of a list as Rachel has.
my only really claim to fame is I have really cute dogs. So we're talking about card games today. Other than, you know, like sitting down and playing like War when you're a kid. Jim, do you prefer Jim or James?
Jim, James, Jimmy, Jim Bob.
I call him Jimmy.
Jim Bob might get a little weird, but also might increase ratings, so we'll see where that leads us. How did you get into card games, and what did what kind of draws you about those games?
So for me personally, growing up, I did a fair amount of video games and stuff, as most young kids do. Read a lot of comic books and things as well. As I got older, got to college, started playing a lot more RPGs, Dungeons and Dragons and the like. And as I started doing more and more of the RPG world, I found that I enjoyed the interaction you got with other people a lot more than you used to do when just playing by yourself on a video game or playing online with people you've never actually met. And as I played more RPG stuff, finding that I really enjoyed the human interaction, the human component to games. I transitioned a little bit more into board games, card games. And the reason I'm actually designing games currently is back 3 years ago, I sort of had this realization, you know what? I like making games. I like video games and stuff. I can't make a video game. That's big, complicated, requires a lot of coding experience.
Uh-oh. We have some mutation where your microphone went quiet.
Well, I'm going to let Jimmy play with that, and I'll answer your question, Walt.
Excellent. Please do.
So I had quite the gaming family growing up. We, of course, played your typical board games, Monopoly, Life, and we also played your typical card games, Euchre, Hearts, Poker. But we also played D&D. So I was about 6 years old when my brother said, "You are going to play this game with me." And we played Redbox. And I've played just about every RPG like Redbox since then, until the GM says, no, this is how we play. Now I've adapted to the rules, obviously, writing for Pathfinder and somewhat for 5e. I played Vampire a lot in high school, and I did LARPing. But even before that, my mom got us into a lot of different games, logical games like Chinese Checkers, but we also had Sanctuary. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Thieves World, the novels, but they had a board game way back in the day. So even then, we were playing off-the-wall gamer geeky type games. Been a legacy, I guess, both in my family and in my life moving forward. I never anticipated that I would work in the gaming industry. I did work in publishing. I've worked as an actuary, and then I found myself in a unique situation to pick on some extra work. And so my brother had recommended applying for Frog Eye Games, was looking for a web designer. And so that's how I ended up getting into the industry. I was like, yeah, sure, I can build him a website for, you know, a small stipend and get involved. Well, the next I knew was they were asking me, well, what do you know about this Kickstarter? And so I was like, I don't know anything about Kickstarter, but I'm a fast learner and I'm ready to do what I can to find out. So, Jimmy, we heard you there for a second.
Oh, okay. So we might be using the phone with the laptop. Do we still have the video image?
Yes.
We okay. do, and you look glorious. I'm jealous of your beard.
Okay, excellent.
So it was, so the first Kickstarter that I ever ran was actually Rappanathic for Frog God Games, and we brought in $246,000, and that was my learning curve.
So it brought in a little.
Yeah. So, and I've been professionally in the industry then ever since.
Excellent. And so a question open to both of you. Card games, what are your favorites?
Pandemic is fun. I guess it's more board game part card game. Dominion, which is very similar to Legends of Draxia, which I'll let Jimmy talk about. But you know, I'm a board gamer. I really like board gaming, but I guess I play a fair bit of card games here and there. Growing up, it was Euchre. That was my card game of choice.
Nice. Jimmy?
Honestly, the ones she said are truly some of my favorites as well, but I guess that's sort of ironic there. I don't know. I think games like Smash Up and stuff are pretty fun too.
Nice. I'm a huge fan of exploding kittens. So,
yes, I have exploded a few kittens in my life. one of the reasons I like Dominion, that new concept that you're building your deck and you're playing it and you're building it, which is one of the things I liked about Legends of Draxia. So when I had met Jimmy at GameholeCon, his sister was demoing their game. And that was the first thing I noticed. This was very similar to Dominion in the sense that you were collecting your resources in order to build your deck up. But you were using that deck then to attack monsters, to bring on spells, and ultimately get victory points from either building the buildings that gave you resources or by attacking monsters. And I was like, wow, this is like RPG meets Dominion. I was like, I really like this game. And it wasn't until, like Jimmy said, a year later at Gen Con that we ended up having, I guess, what we would consider a business meeting at 2 a.m. While drinking in a hotel lobby and said, hey, you're the person who has Legend of Draxia. I like that game. You know, what do you think about doing a game for us? And so then that's kind of how that spawned off. But I had no idea that when I walked away in 2016 GameCon that I would have seen Jimmy again and saw his product again. So that was fun.
Right on.
A lot of fun. One quick note sidebar about the Draxia game that I designed. Interestingly, I had never played Dominion until after I designed the game. And then people were like, hey, this sort of reminds me of Dominion. So I played Dominion. I was like, oh, I guess there's some overlap there. Although in a lot of ways, it's a very different game. It's an engine builder compared to a deck builder. So you always have access to the cards you buy as opposed to you hope that you get the right draws. So a little bit of difference there.
Yeah, it's got a little magic tapping action going on too.
Yeah.
Now, have you guys tried stuff like Magic the Gathering or Pokemon or anything like that?
Oh, I've definitely played.
I've played Magic the Addiction.
There might be a deck or two in the garage.
Yeah, or a box or several.
Now, what about that kind of game draws you in so much and makes you want to get to that next level or get that next pack?
You want to go, Rachel? Or...
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. For me personally, I like the creation process. That's what really gets me from a enjoyment standpoint, is when I've got a box of Legos and I can build my own world, so to speak. And Magic the Gathering does a good job with that, is it gives you all of these different pieces and then you put them together into something that works together. And I find it really fun personally to go through just on a Magic card website that just has all the cards listed there, and I'll sit down and just scroll through card after card after card, type in some keyword, and then just build a deck based off of some theme that I've thought of. And then I intentionally just go, oh, you know what, that's a $5 card, well, let's just go buy a 25 cent card that's a tiny bit less good, but essentially does the same thing. And so I'll just build my decks that way, usually.
Well, and for me, it's the competition. When I play something like Magic, it's all about trying to annihilate my opponents as quickly as possible.
Don't hold back. Tell us how you really feel.
I know. I am a big fan of themed decks. So I was I often would have a red deck with goblins and a green deck with nymphs. And that was my go-to deck. But we're talking back the beta cards. I haven't played Magic in some years now.
And what about stuff like Pokemon? Now, I never really got into it. I spent some time overseas where it's really, really big. And then I came home, and sure enough, there's my nephews. Hey, man, have you seen this game? It's like I might have seen tried to walk down the sidewalk through the line that waiting for the next pack to come out. But have you guys experienced like phenomenon style gaming through cards like that?
No, I mean, I felt like I had aged out of cards at that moment when Pokemon really was like more of the rage than I guess Magic was. But I was surprised that Pokemon Go, how quickly it came on and went. Now, I'm sure there are still pockets of it, but I remember two summers ago when that first came out. I mean, a lot of people who didn't even play card games were really into this app and like running through bushes. And I was like, what has the world become? And it was fascinating. But it seemed like it also died out very quickly, too. And I know people still play, but not to the same level that they did before.
Oh yeah, you had you would walk into businesses and there would be signs that says you must walk in if you walk in the store, you must buy something. Please do not disturb other patrons with Pokemon Go app running. Blah blah blah.
Nope, no Pikachu here.
Right on. Now that brings me to my next question. How do you feel card games can evolve when you have access to technology like this? I mean, can you transition? Like, you guys are running a Kickstarter right now. Is it possible to do like stretch goals where you have an app support for your decks or anything like that? Where do you see this type of gaming going?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's our game could definitely lend itself to an app. I don't know if you play Splendor. That's a card game with tokens, and they have an app, and you can play solo. And that's one of the things that our game allows for is you can play solo or up to 5 players. And so I could definitely see having the locations and the monster cards very easily adaptable into an app, and then having your character access as well. So I think it's solo play is great. We could also have it be multiple player as well, and then network that way, like several of the other apps that are out there do. But we've got to get this one funded first, the box copy, and get it in the hands of gamers. And it is a new concept to a point. I know that Paizo did their venture card game, and ours is a little bit different than that. Ours is meant to be quick, slick. Like I said, you can play solo or you can play it with a GM, which makes it a little bit different. And it's really the gateway game into RPGing or just bringing on your friends who don't want to sit 8 hours through a campaign on a Saturday, but want to get the little taste of RPG in. So the idea is that you've got 4 players and you always play the game with 4 players. So if I'm the only person playing, I have my 4 characters and I control all 4 characters. And then you can divvy it up between however many other players you want. If you have 5 people playing, one of those players chooses to be the GM. And then the GM has a unique opportunity to choose which location or monsters or treasure is in there. And they can even weave in their own storytelling and use the cards as an aid in that sense. There's no map, so there's no tactical combat, but we do have, you know, your armor class and your weapon modifier. And so all of that, it's very rules light, but it's all there. And then as you're picking up treasure, you can get advanced weapons, you can get potions, you can get healing potions, acid flask, you know, the like. And then all of it's based on the art from the Gothic campaign compendium that Legendary Games put out a few years back. And so it's very Gothic horror feel to it. And, you know, you sit down, basically the idea is you're going to take your party through these locations. So if you're not playing with a GM, you're going to be randomly drawing them off the deck. And then at some point when you hit the doom level, you'll have some of the cards will have dooms on them. But when you pull three dooms, those dooms will have a number, you'll add that up, and that will be your boss monster. So you pull that, and the idea is if your party can survive the boss monster, you've won the game. And if not, then you've lost. So some of the things that make it replayable are two aspects of it. The first is you're going to be pulling different locations and different monsters each time. You can also choose different characters to play through. And the other thing is the fate deck. So instead of having dice, it's a diceless mechanic, and you're going to be pulling off of the fate deck, which will give you your randomization. But in the fate deck, you have an opportunity to add in madness cards. So the madness cards will make things more difficult. It will give the advantage to some of the monsters. It's kind of like your fail, your critical fail cards. And then you can add additional ones to make the game harder, or there's certain mechanics in the game that tell you to put in the madness cards into the game. So it's kind of like Pandemic in the sense that if you want to start off really hard, you add more epidemic cards in the beginning. And if you just can't seem to win this game, you just take them out, or not all of them, obviously, take a few out. Now in our game, you could play without the madness cards or add in as many as you like. So then it becomes a challenge, you know, can you beat this monster with all of the madness cards in there?
Nice. So let's backtrack a little bit. First of all, we need to welcome Mike Lafferty to the show, who might be a little groggy.
Yeah, I just came back from the doctor. So my pupils are fully dilated. So you guys are all very bright right now.
Right on. And Mike, we've been talking cards and all the different cards that are all the rage to play. Real quick, did you have a favorite card game?
I spend way too much time playing Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Yes, that's a fun game.
Yeah, I play it in, you know, with actual human beings a couple times a month, and then I play it on my phone almost constantly. So yeah, I'm a big fan of that one.
Nice.
And go raw.
Back when I was a wee lad, I was playing Magic the Gathering, but I've since recovered and haven't had a relapse in decades, so I'm pretty proud of that.
Me too.
Right. So how is Kickstarter doing?
We are chugging along.
So they got 13 days as of this recording, and we're looking at a little over halfway funded. But I mean, if you go into the chat, Mike, and click this link, if somebody wanted to go to Kickstarter and click Fates of Madness, an RPG card game, the artwork, several of the demonstration videos are just phenomenal. So if we could backtrack a little bit and talk about a game convention where a guy meets a girl and they talk about cards, could you guys talk about how this process started? And could you give us a little backdrop about the world of Fates of Madness?
Yeah, Jimmy, you want to start?
Okay, so all the way back to how Rachel and I met up doing game stuff for Lafferty there. Is that what we're doing here?
You tell me.
Okay, well.
Your show, your mic.
Okay, well, quick recap. Rachel and I met up at Gamehole Con in 2016. She played through my Legends of Draxia card game that I designed and was demoing there. Then 8-9 months later at Gen Con in 2017, we met up again. At that point, Legendary Games was looking to expand out their repertoire of games they had. And she asked if I'd be interested in designing a game for them, which I said yes. And so from there, I sat down, looked through a lot of their different books and intellectual property they had. I settled on their Gothic horror line, which had a whole bunch of really cool art assets and looked like we could work with that. And so from there, I started designing a Gothic horror RPG card game for them. which is currently Fates of Madness. So in that, we took all of their pre-generated characters in their scenarios and sort of simplified them down, tried to get the core essence of what that character was, and turned that into a character for the game. For example, these guys right here. Assuming that we've got decent my video here. Not sure how we're seeing them.
Yeah, you got good video. What's the image you're putting up? And I might be able to share the image on my screen.
Oh, there's just the different character cards.
Okay.
Yep. We just took all the different pre-generated characters. So what's kind of fun there is if you know the Legendary Games lore, you can actually see like the characters' bios and things like that that were put into their book. So that's a little bit of fun right there. So I took those, turned them into my own game mechanics. Then we would send them on to an adventure, which basically you'd draw location cards to simulate the adventure. And so the location cards are either going to be monsters, such as this possessed mannequin. And if it's a monster, you go and fight it and see how you do.
Dolls are so possessed. Dolls are so creepy.
That is a pretty creepy doll. Yep. If you beat the monster, then you go into a post-event action where you get to basically try to search for loot or heal people or make potions. Then you continue drawing more location cards. Eventually, you'd draw location cards such as, one second, the derelict house right here. This one is a scenario card. So you've got your monsters and then you've got these placed scenario cards. With the scenario cards, you'll have some special event that happens that all the players have to attempt to do, such as in the derelict house, there's a whole bunch of holes in the floorboards. Try not to fall through the floor. So everybody has to draw fate cards, which is the die mechanics to the game. And if you fail, then you fall through the floor and hurt yourself. If you succeed, then you don't take any damage. And then you go into that post-event action where you can heal people up, make potions, or search for treasure in that house. Eventually draw enough these location cards that have doom counters. That's the little skull in the corner. And once you've drawn three cards, doom counter in the corner, then you draw the final boss, which is determined based off of some of the doom counters. So you don't really know what the final boss is until the last card drawn. And then you try not to die. And if you kill the monsters, you win. If you die, well, then you lose. So that's the game in a quick little nutshell.
Nice.
To make the game more difficult, you can add in additional madness cards into the game, which is the skulls. And this is a fate card. And so instead of using dice, we use the fate deck. And so that simulates the die rolls. So it's numbered 1 through 6 on here. And it's really pale. We're changing the colors up so it's easier to read. And so whenever you need to do a die roll, you draw a fate card and see what number that is and add that into your weapon attack or into your skill attempts, what have you. And if you want to make the game more difficult, you add in more of these madness cards, which means auto fails for player characters or special bonus attacks for monster characters. So you can scale the difficulty of the game that way.
Right on. Now, I'm an artist and I get caught up on images so quickly. Let's talk about this art. Oh my God, gorgeous. Please, please, please tell us about this art.
So the way Legendary Games got started is that we were doing plugins for Paizo's Pathfinder Adventure. And all of our writers came from people who wrote for Paizo. That was kind of our litmus test, that you had to already be a writer for them and you had to be working on the adventure path. And the idea was that Paizo cuts you off at 32,000 words per adventure path. But a lot of times authors had more words that they wanted to print. So we wanted to be able to give that writer an avenue to print the rest of their material. But we didn't want to half-ass it by any stretch of the imagination. So we decided we needed to get legendary art to go with our legendary writers. And that's how Legendary Games came about. So little over in the time, we've brought in more and more artists. We have well over 100 artists who work for us now. And our initial books, we did a PDF only. And then when I came on the company in 2012, we started getting into print. And so our first project then was the Gothic Campaign Compendium, We were going to put in hardback, and we did it through Kickstarter, and that allowed us to bring in more assets to allow to upgrade some of our art. And since then, we've done that with a lot of our other lines too, like our Pirate line, our Legendary Planet line. We recently finished our Forest Kingdom line, and a lot of our stretch goals on that have been art stretch goals. So over the years, Legendary Games has been able to better its art a little at a time to match all of its writing. And then we even have stretch goals on here for art that we'd like to take our character art, which right now is in sepia tones, and we'd like to do full color on that. So that's one of the stretch goals that we have. There's some more monsters we'd like to bring on, and those are stretch goals as well. Additional character, which would be a rogue, which currently is not in the game. We do have an Inquisitor. And a ranger. And then we'd like to have one of the exclusive cards be the rogue, and we would get new artwork for that. We've got a plethora of artwork with Legendary Games now, and we're interested in getting it out there for other uses.
Nice. Now, who are some of these magical pen slingers who are creating some of this art?
We have a very long list of names that I could go through. But I'm happy, you know, I can send you guys all of the artists, and then you guys can post that with wherever the video is at.
Oh, yeah, some of the show notes. Too easy.
So another thing from an art standpoint, Legendary is obviously provided. So it's a Legendary Mythica game co-developed product. And so Mythica Gaming here has basically designed the game aspect. And then Mythica Gaming's in-house graphic designer, Teresa Weibler, is the one that took all of his art assets and then framed them and put on the layout for things and touched things up. So she also had a lot to do with the art as well. So if you're looking for a name to attach to some of the art, she does the layout and design, graphic design of it.
Yeah, the cars look gorgeous. Nice backdrops. Makes the art really pop. The some of the tones are really just brilliant. The Jabberwock is a fun little thing, but I gotta tell you, man, that creepy doll. Bleh. So, Mike, did you have any questions?
Sorry, I was talking on mute. No, I'm good. I'm just getting caught up to what you guys have been talking about. So I'm all right. Sorry, I know you're hoping for more on that question.
it's fine. We know that you're stumbling through your keyboard at the moment.
Well, when I get dilated, it's hard to read things up close. So not to make an excuse, but this is pretty cool. Does it feel more? And it's billed as an RPG card game. Does it feel more like an RPG or a card game when you're playing through scenarios?
I would say it feels more like a card game when you're playing it by yourself or you're sort of playing versus the AI, so to speak. If you're playing it with a GM player, it turns it much more RPG-like, though. So if you want to, all those locations where you see all those monsters and those different scenarios like the abandoned laboratory or the derelict house, what you can do is have a player play as the GM, and they control what are the next scenarios that you would be using. And so on all of those cards, you have usually a one or two liner that sort of sets the scene for things. And if you have the GM, they go, okay, now we're going into this derelict house because there's this unnatural storm that forces you in there. And then you do the scene, and then you could go, okay, now we're leaving that house as the storm is abated, and you travel into this ghost town. And as you're exploring through this dress shop, you come across this possessed mannequin. And so you can really turn it into a very detailed story if you have a GM player running the game, so to speak. So it's sort of both.
And for me, I actually feel it plays more a little bit more like an RPG because you've got your weapons, your attack, your modifier, you're pulling, you know, your dice rolls, is your fate deck, and you're comparing it to their armor class and their attack. So, you know, for me, it feels very very much like an RPG. And like Jimmy said, with our GM, you can expand the discussions between locations and what you do post locations, which I'll let Jimmy touch on that in a second. But also the campaign compendium is one of the options you can add to the Kickstarter, which is the Gothic book this is based off of. The rules are Pathfinder, but in it, it has, you know, each character has 2 or 3 pages of their backstory. And then there's three adventures in there that you can use ideas from, like Where the Mannequin Came From. And you can use that to build your own RPG, kind of like a little homebrew based on the assets, and then use those cards as tactile tools to move your characters through the adventure.
Okay, so that campaign compendium is a Pathfinder supplement.
Yes.
Okay, cool. You know, you guys keep saying Possessed Mannequin, and I keep thinking of that Kim Cattrall movie from 1987. I gotta shake that, but...
Yes, the one where they're walking down the hallway.
And he's back, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Lafferty. Oh,
sorry.
That's awesome. Oh.
Cool. So how'd you, we keep talking about this as a gothic fantasy. How did you capture that tone in the art and in the writing? Because that's a little, you know, that's a little afield from just your generic, you know, elves and dwarves kind of, you know, fantasy.
Yeah. So the monsters are a little gruesome. but and the writing is very bland on the cards in a sense, because it's meant to be as universal as you can make it, especially if you're running the GM. We wanted it to be open so that they could use that location however they saw fit. But then if you read through the Gothic Campaign Companion in those stories, they fit into the Carrion Crown adventure path from Paizo. I mean, it's meant to kind of fit into that. So the writers did, you know, a beautiful job of pulling in some of that horror and some of the gothic lore, I guess, from that adventure path. And then, Jimmy, do you want to tell them about the post actions, like some of the things that they can do afterwards, and how you can weave that into the RPG storytelling?
Yeah. So, as I was saying earlier, for whenever you complete a location card, either a monster fight or a place scenario, each one of the player characters, because you always have a party of four people, gets one action they can take. And you can have three different choices amongst those. If you have the heal skill, you can do a heal check where you draw a fate card, add your wisdom score, and you heal that many hit points to a player. If you have the alchemy skill, you can do an alchemy, just make a potion with your alchemy skill, and so you take your action and go, I'm just going to make a potion. Third is you can do a post-event action using whatever is listed on the card. So if it's a monster, usually it's just sort of a make a strength check or make a intelligence check and draw a treasure or draw a potion. If it's a scenario card, a lot of times you'll have two or three different options listed as possible things. So you might have a special skill that allows you to just draw treasure for free. Or you might have a, we're in the graveyard and you can go search through the graveyard for treasure. If you fail, you might have to draw a madness card because you started going crazy as you were searching through it. And so doing those post-event actions, searching for treasure, trying to make potions and things like that, helps to build a world around what your characters are doing. And tries to, helps to get you invested in the role play aspect of the game.
Now, do you have to put on your creepy person hat to come up with the madness cards? Can you talk about how that mechanic crept into things?
So in general, when I was working on designing a gothic horror game, I sort of gave myself like, what are the core tenets of gothic horror as a setting? And to me, a determined fate where you're stuck on this path and you have a little bit less control over your own will is pretty common in a gothic setting, in a horror setting. Also, madness also seemed like a very natural fit of, especially if you think of the Cthulhu-esque Lovecraftian world, you've obviously got madness in there. And so I just wanted to build that intrinsically into the gameplay itself. So that's where you can draw those madness cards and your players automatically fail if they're doing a attribute check looking for treasure, or when the monsters draw madness, then they do some special attack and changes the gameplay up a little bit.
Now, when we first play tested the first iteration of this game with Jimmy, that was something that was not added to the game. So it was just a straight 1 through 6 were the numbers on the cards. And then you got that, you know, whatever you pulled, you pulled. And so it was during that play test. And that was actually, I want to say it was Game Hole Con 2017. Was that correct?
Yeah. So it was about 3 months into the development.
Yeah, that's when Jimmy was like, yeah, what if we did something like a madness? And then we, you know, we loved the idea. We're like, yes, do that and have this built in. And so it's really worked very well. And now it's given, like I said earlier, an ability, another replayable ability for the deck to make it more difficult.
So one of the cool things when we're talking about making this an RPG game, it very much is an RPG card game as it sits. Assuming that we continue forward with this and make an expansion to the game, we can make this even more of an RPG game to take it to the next level. So my hope here is when we do an expansion to this game, that you've got your standard locations where you go, draw a location card, eventually you fight a boss monster, kill the boss monster, hooray, you've succeeded. And then you go into episode 2, if you will, and you have a new set of locations and a new set of boss monsters that you draw through. And after you've completed session 1 with your party, then you can start on campaign 2, so to speak, and start drawing through the secondary locations, keeping all of the loot and treasure that you've picked up from the first session, along with potentially having upgrade tokens and things to make your characters even better and more customized. So with the expansions in mind, you'll turn this game from just sort of a quick little one-shot to a 2 or 3 episode mini campaign where you can grow and develop your characters. So that's the hopeful end goal for this series, making just mini episode campaigns.
But then the idea too is if you just wanted to sit down with someone who's never played an RPG before, you could sit down and quickly explain the rules of the game and play for 30, 40 minutes and then be done, you know, or slowly baby step your friends into playing a bigger 8-hour campaign game on Saturday, but maybe first using the cards and then morphing into whatever you, you know, find to be the best fit for your group.
And as the you mentioned, from an easy, that to me, easy rule set was key. I love RPGs. I love the big, complicated Pathfinder, etc. types of RPG systems. But it's obviously very difficult to get a lot of people into games like that. And so when I design card games, to me, it's very important that it's a easy, simple, slick system that gives you the comprehensive depth of an RPG, but without all of the complicated rules that go along with it.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, so, to just invite people over and say, hey, let's play the game. And hey, here's this book that's roughly the size and weight of textbooks you remember from college. And we're going to have to consult it about every 5 or 10 minutes. And it kind of just kills the pickup game vibe. But with something like this.
Absolutely.
So when I've run in this at conventions, which I've been for the last couple weekends. So I was at Southern Fried Gaming in Atlanta, Georgia. And that was in Origins last weekend. And I'm going to Convergence in Minneapolis in 2 weeks, so I've got a whole con schedule myself. When I'm running these at conventions, all the time I'll sit down with people who have obviously never played the game before. Within about 5 to 10 minutes, they're playing the game very competently. After the half hour is through, we've finished the game. Frequently, we'll have somebody come up that's, while we're playing the game, curious about it, and I'll sit back, and the person that just played the game once will teach the new person how to play the game, without referencing the rules or anything. And occasionally they might ask me a question about something, but 95% of the game is played without me even interacting whatsoever after one person's played it once. So really easy game to learn and pick up and teach to others.
So you can't do that with Hero System.
Yeah, not so much.
Nothing against Hero System. I mean, it's got lots of people who love it, and it's a good game, but I can't teach it to you in 5 minutes.
Right. And for people who know RPG games and the way that they function, this is actually probably second hat to them. They're like, okay, I got it. Armor class attack. Got it. Dice roll, you know, bait deck, same, move on. And it is very quick. For people who don't know anything about that, that is the learning curve there. But there are symbols on the cards, all standardized across the deck. So basically, once you know what the symbols mean and the slight math that's involved, right? My character's ability plus my weapon's ability plus my fate deck, you know, does that beat their armor class, you know, on that side? So once that's really the math that we're talking about. So there's no math finder here. And once they understand what all of those symbols are on their card, that's the learning curve. Like, that's it. Now you're off and running.
So math finder, is that copyrighted? Can we use that?
I'll be honest, it didn't come from me. I'm totally repeating it from somebody else I heard.
Gotcha. So this is, I mean, you've distilled the RPG experience down to a set of cards, which is absolutely fantastic, especially if you're just over at a friend's house and you have that, you know, you have that quick backpack where you're like, oh no, I brought this. It's fine. You guys need to check this out.
Yeah, party game, totally.
Right on. Can you talk about the solo experience? Because, I mean, you get so few games today that have a solo experience that are tabletop based. Most people go to video games for that today.
So for the solo experience part of it, what's really cool about it, when you're playing the game without a GM, whether you're playing with one to four people, the solo experience is exactly the same game experience as you will get if you're playing with multiple players. Obviously, you miss out on the social interaction, which is half the game in general, but there's no way to make a solo game socially interactable unless you're online video gaming kind of stuff. But how the solo game works is you control all four playable characters, because you always make a party of four out of the eight possible character combinations you've got. So you make a party of four, and you control all four people. And then you just start drawing location cards and do the adventure. And so playing it by yourself, you choose what your characters are doing, you heal them up, you control the party. Honestly, it sort of plays like, are you familiar with Baldur's Gate back in the late 1990s?
Oh, yeah.
It kind of plays like a Baldur's Gate, where you control the entire party, you design your party, you control all of them, you go through adventure, you assign the equipment cards to each person. So it actually has a very Baldur's Gate kind of feel to it from that perspective, from a solo play, which obviously I think plays great as a solo game.
But one of the things I want to add to it is I like the aspect of this game that you can't cheat. I find that sometimes in solo games, it's not as fun if you know you can rig the system. So in this, when you're playing without a GM, when you pull the location cards or the, more importantly, the monster cards, it will have on there what player that they attack. So, you know, you've got player one, player two, and that's on your hit point tracker. And so then if it's, you know, the monster says, all right, we're going to attack player one on this, you can't cheat and say, well, that character only has one hit point, so the monster's not going to attack it. You know, it's like, nope, sorry, you know, and go through it. So I like that aspect of it, that it has the ability to play. And then, like I spoke earlier, you can make it more difficult by adding the madness into the deck before you start. And so if you've played through it one or two times and you're like, okay, I got the hang of this, and you really want to see how far your party can go, then you just add all the madness cards in and see if you can beat the monsters then.
All right, when you say madness, you're talking about like Call of Cthulhu sort of madness, like your character has seen things that can't be unseen and you're losing your grip on reality, or some other kind of madness?
Well, that's definitely the way that you can describe it, like if a GM's running it. But basically what happens is in the dice list system, you've got cards 1 through 6, and those are your modifiers. And then you have a modifier card you can add in called madness. And so it's only a 1, so that's pretty much going to guarantee that whatever skill check you're doing or monster you're attacking, that you're going to lose. So it's, in a sense, your critical failure. But then if a monster draws that card, it gives it a different ability. So there's 2 stats on every monster card. One of them is just, you know, this is what this monster would normally do. And the other one is, if this monster is in madness, where they might normally do a spell, now they're physically attacking you instead of, you know, magically attacking you, for example.
I think you guys were covering this as I logged in a few minutes ago, so I apologize for making you repeat yourself.
No worries.
I play this kind of reminded me of there's a dungeon crawler video game you might have probably heard of called Darkest Dungeons. And it's got kind of an old school feel, but every time you go into a dungeon, there's a chance when you're coming out that there's random bad stuff that happens to you. Your guy gets PTSD or contracts horrible gastrointestinal problems. And, you know, there's mechanical failures for all that. And one of the, I mean, it's funny, but it's not, you know, sometimes you think you've done this dungeon crawl great. And as you're leaving, oh, you got syphilis. I guess. What was I doing with the kobolds? I don't understand how that happened. But
right. And when you're doing your post-event actions, if you're healing and you pull a madness card, that would be a perfect time to basically, on your own, even without a GM, to ad-lib what happens to you. You know, so it gives the ability for the players to build that into their storyline too, and go Cthulhu-like on their game.
Okay, cool. Well, this sounds great. I wish you guys the best of luck with your Kickstarter. So it looks like you're over halfway with still about half the time left. So you're definitely in good standing.
Yeah. So we're hoping to get the word out to more people because it is a unique thing. We're not quite going for card gamers. We're not quite going for RPGers. We're looking for people to, you know, take a chance on basically a merge of the two, but then, you know, have an option to play solo or play at a party or bring in their grandmother or child to play the game with them.
So do you think the grandma will totally take to the idea of kobold syphilis?
you know, I was in a band called Kobold Syphilis for a while.
It's going to, we're going to have to do a revival.
Yeah, we went to Johnny Cash songs in the style of Red Hot Chili Peppers. It was very big.
Oh my goodness.
I got some CDs if you guys want to buy it. We'll talk later. Sorry. Sorry.
Nice. Let's real quick before this gets out, more out of hand than normal. Let's talk about the reward tiers. So at the $30 reward tier, you get a copy of the game.
Yes. Yeah. So we start off with that. We jumped right to it. So I know a lot of times you get like a postcard or a button or a t-shirt. We're like, no, you know what? We're selling games. We want to sell the card game. So that's our first reward tier. And then that's going to include your shipping to the United States. And then at $45, you can get the copy of the game and the PDF of the Gothic Campaign Compendium. So that way, if you want to make it more of an RPG, you don't have to carry a textbook around with you. You can just access your phone or your PDF. At the $60 level, you can get the hardback with the PDF of the Gothic Campaign Compendium and the card game. At $65, we were hoping to be able to get through some of our bonus goals where we can get out those exclusive card games I talked about, like the Rogue or some of the monsters that we have in mind to add on. So if we get to those goals, this is definitely one you want to jump on. Jimmy's willing to sign those exclusive card games that will only be offered to the Kickstarter. You'll get the card game and the Gothic Campaign PDF and hardback. And at $100, you get the card game, the PDF, the hardback of the book. We have someone who custom makes wooden boxes and engraves them. So they'll be doing that. And then the exclusive cards if we fund at that level. And our last pledge level is $115. And you get basically everything. You get the card game. You get the Gothic Campaign hardback and PDF. You get the exclusive cards. And then you get Mythica Gaming's first card game, Legends of Drexia, with their expansion deck, Corrupted Mana.
Nice. Nice. And like we said before, it's 13 days to go. There's still plenty of time to back this and get those stretch goals knocked in. Jimmy, is there anything else you want us to know about Fates of Madness? And please, everybody, jump into the Kickstarter and at least take a look at things, because like I said, this art is mind-numbing. Really deserves a look. Did you want to throw in some last thoughts about the game?
I'd say it plays, like I said, 1 to 5 players. It's about a half hour, 45 minute play time. So nice, short, sweet. Anybody?
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, half hour, 45 minute play time. Excellent on that. In general, I'd say 13 plus more in general from the age range. 10
because
plus
of the art.
mostly because of the art standpoint. 10 plus if from a kid's playing it. Although some parents might be a little offended because it's a Gothic horror themed thing. So there's some like brutality and torture written in there. Nothing too bad, but you might, it's PG-13 rated from the rating standpoint.
It's child safe torture, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, yes.
Correct.
So 10 and up from a play standpoint, PG-13 from a content standpoint. So quick, easy game, nice, cheap game to pick up. It's not one of those, hey, drop $100 to buy this giant, huge game. It's the first joint project between Legendary and Mythica Gaming, and I think it's coming along very nicely, and I think we'll be seeing a lot more co-developed products between the two of us, our companies.
Yeah, and the takeaway I want to leave people with is two things. The first is that it's a unique card game in the sense that we have, besides all the other things we mentioned, that we have two sizes. We've got the tarot cards, and so you can see more of the art. So that's going to be on our monsters. It's going to be on your character cards. It's going to be on your location cards and your boss monsters. And then we've got your poker cards, and that's on the stuff you're going to be reshuffling. So it's your equipment, your fate cards, your treasure, your potions. And that's to help save table space as well. But again, we want to make sure people can see the art on these cards. So we made the ones that have the most art on them a little bit larger. And then the second takeaway I want people to know is, even though it may be PG-13, we did play test this game with, at the time, my 7-year-old twins, and they love it and they have fun. So if, you know, if you're a gamer hard and your kids aren't too sensitive to some of the gore and the art, then, you know, go for it, because it's a great game to get your kids adding some of those numbers and subtracting armor class and, you know, and get them in the gaming world.
Right on. That's fantastic. I like I said, I really love what you're doing with this so far. So right after we're done, I'm gonna see if I can hide some of my my money in your Kickstarter. Mike, Mike, final thoughts.
Sorry, I was talking to mute again. Hey, wish you guys the best of luck, and all our listeners, please give it a look.
Excellent. So on behalf of Mike Lafferty, who happens to be here today, and seeing as I have control of the magic carpet, this has been the Banff Podcast. We've been talking to Mythica Games and Legendary Games, both James and Rachel. Fates of Madness is on Kickstarter. Please go there immediately. And make sure you get your Kobold Syphilis card signed by James. Let's get this thing, let's get this thing done. And we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.